RadioInfluence.com.
He got him in the white trunks. He hurt him.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Wow. You think it's a mission? And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout. He's outreached Franklin. He changed his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the MMA Report podcast right here on RadioInfluence.com. Coming up on this week's episode of the podcast, we're going to recap what happened last Saturday night. UFC Fight Night 125. We're going to tell you our top four takeaways from that fight card. Of course, a lot of controversy in relation to the co-main event. We'll talk about that. Also, we're going to preview this weekend's UFC 221, get into some of the latest news and notes, listener questions. Plus, we'll have three interviews for you here on the podcast. You're going to hear from Angelo Reyes, who is a boxing coach and a striking coach for Frank Mir and Anna Houlton, to talk about what we saw on Saturday night in the co-main event of UFC Fight Night 125. Also get his thoughts on Anna's fight next Friday night at Bellator 194 against Heather Hardy. Also, we'll talk to Ben Wynn, who is going to be fighting this weekend at UFC 221. He'll be a part of the preliminary card on FS1. Big matchup for him there, a part of that card down there in Australia. And then our final interview is going to be with Andre Feely, of course, coming off a win a couple weeks ago at UFC on Fox 27. So talk to Andre about his victory there. So let's get right into it. Daniel, how you doing, man?
Jason, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not doing quite well because like 2 weeks ago, I don't know if you recall, but I had a cold of some sort.
Yeah.
And usually those last about like 4 or 5 days. And I felt like it was gone. But all of a sudden, late last night, I get a little bit of a sore throat. And here I am, Jason, waking up with another cold. And I tell you what, this cold, I wish it was over. It can't be stopped. I can only imagine if you get some type of microscope and go into my lungs, you'll find a mini Mario Yamasaki working my immune system and just allowing it to get pummeled into submission without stopping it.
Does he have the little heart symbol going?
Yeah, he just does it right over my heart. I mean, how ironic is it that the referee who is like most harmful to your heart, it does a heart emoji before – a heart symbol before each fight. I mean, holy moly. How scary must that be if you're a fighter and you see Mario Yamasaki inside the cage before your fight starts? You know you better win because this is being fought under gladiator rules.
Yeah, man. Obviously, that is the number one storyline coming out of UFC Fight Night 125. Not even close. You know, we're recording this podcast on Tuesday afternoon, February 6th. And, of course, that's still a big topic going on, you know. There's so much to talk about with this aspect, you know, and I was watching the fights live on Saturday night, and it's kind of interesting how this story has kind of continued to grow. You know, at first it was more about, you know, and look, I think there's multiple people you can blame here. Mario Yamasaki has to be one of them. I think the second part, you have to look at the UFC matchmaking in this fight. And I think the third part has got to be Priscilla's corner. Like, do you care about her? You know, and there's so many aspects of this. You know, the aspect that, you know, that's really not being talked about, Daniel, is the fact of Valentina Shevchenko. Oh, my God, at 125 pounds, that is I mean, she was scary at 135. She's even scarier at 125.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it did seem as though a lot of the takeaways from this UFC card were negatives. We'll get into a couple of them, but the biggest negative had to have been both the officiating of this fight, and then you mentioned it. I felt like the second biggest villain was Priscilla's corner. I think you could go UFC number 3 for the matchmaking, but that's not as egregious as both the referee failing to stop this fight earlier and Priscilla's corner failing to stop those fights. Those, to me, are the two big mess-ups. But I can't blame the UFC too much just because at 125 pounds, it is going to be very difficult to match Valentina Shevchenko up with another opponent where she isn't a massive favorite, because she looked like a cyborg, like a Terminator robot. She was so dominant. And what kind of came across was her size, which is crazy just given the 10-pound difference. But I just don't know if anyone can actually beat her, even Joanna Jędrzejczyk moving up in weight. And the thing is, for Shevchenko is like, you know, maybe this fight shouldn't even have been licensed because the odds were so big. But what's that say about her next fight? Like, what will the odds be for Valentina Shevchenko when she challenges for the title? How big of a favorite is she going to be against Nico Montano? Like, will the odds be so wide that you can't license the fight? That's a joke, but I mean, it's going to be wide odds.
Would it shock you if she opens up like an 8-1 favorite?
No, it wouldn't, just because, like, she is very clearly the uncrowned champion. And it would set up an amazing story if Nico Montano was able to win. You read about how she beat Mata Ferry and the fact that she did it very seriously injured. Maybe we're all discounting what Nico Montano brings to the table. But as we stand today, Jason, heading into that fight, Valentina Shevchenko all but stands as an uncrowned champion, and one of the best female fighters of the world, and very likely the best 125-pound fighter in the world. So this could be a really strong reign of dominance for Valentina Shevchenko until some of the top premier 115-pounders move up and some of the best bantamweights move down.
Here's a prime example of what is wrong with the UFC in 2018. Where is all the promotion for the first ever UFC women's flyweight champion?
Well, look, I can't blame – well, actually, yeah, I guess you could blame them for doing a poor job of promoting one of their champions. With that being said, I feel like the UFC knows that Nico Montano is very much a placeholder champion. But I tell you what, that doesn't really excuse them for not promoting someone who is their champion, their first ever champion. But yeah, man, it would be – we've kind of talked about this when it comes to poor Nico, in that if you went to a random bar and you asked someone to name you every UFC champion they could, I feel very confident that 1 out of 10 people would get Nico right. And that might be a stretch that 1 out of 10 random people would name Nico Montano as the flyweight champion.
Now here would be a better case. What if you put 10 female fighters' pictures on a paper and you ask them to circle the UFC women's flyweight champion? Could they do it?
Oh man. There would be a less hit rate. The hit rate would be less than Nico Montano. I think more people know her name than what she looks like. If that tells you anything.
And look, that's an issue with the UFC. But it's unfortunate that we're not talking about Valentina, because, you know, I tweeted during the fight, and it was probably about, I don't know, 30 seconds, a minute before finally Mari Yamasaki finally had a heart, apparently. And I said, is the corner not going to throw in the towel? And we're going, people are going to hear my conversation with Angelo Reyes where we talked about that, the mindset of why the culture of MMA, of just why we don't see this. But you know, that's one thing. I mean, never a good headline when you see, I think it was a bloody elbow story that's where it's her coach telling her to shut up when she said she had her knee was hurting her after the first round. Not a good look. Not a good headline.
No, dude, this is one of the worst corner jobs we've seen in quite a long time. I mean, but again, you can't stress how bad the referee job was. This has to be the last time we see Yamasaki in a UFC cage. This was too high profile of a mess up, and too clearly a mess up. And I understand if you get put out in the spot and you just have all these opportunities, you're going to look bad every once in a while. But Yamasaki has quite a few high-profile mess-ups, and this one was just way too bad. He needs to at least be put on the back burner for quite a while, because this was too bad. But yeah, the corner messed up too, because they didn't stop the fight earlier. In all likelihood, Priscilla probably probably received a lot of long-term damage that she could have escaped from it and not been on the receiving end, when she clearly, you know, even before the first round was over, you could have stopped that fight, honestly. I mean, that was like a 10-7 round for Shevchenko. It was so dominant for Valentina. And I don't know what the solution is, because I know you're going to talk about the culture of that later on in the interview, but maybe you have to just come up with a crazy rule, Jason. Like, here is my crazy suggestion, and it's tongue-in-cheek. It's not serious, obviously, but my suggestion on how to fix the culture of corner stoppages is, Jason, have you ever played Russian roulette?
No.
Okay, well, this relates to Russian roulette. I'm glad you haven't, by the way. That'd be crazy if you had. But it's basically like there's a Russian roulette on every card, where out of every card, one fight, the referee doesn't have the power to stop the fight, but no one knows which referee it is and which fight it is. So it's like completely on the corner to stop the fight, or else their fighter dies, you know? So that's my suggestion, Jason, is that we play gladiator rules, where one fight and you don't know which one it is, the referee can't stop the fight. So that means the corner has to like be incentivized to stop the fight, or else they have like a homicide on their hands.
Look, here's the problem with Mario in terms of his statement. We should never have a referee that says, I want to allow the fighter to be a warrior out there. Hold on. Your job is to protect the fighter.
That's honestly, did he say that?
Yes. Yes.
Today?
He goes, the way I see it, I allowed her to be a warrior and keep fighting. I could have stopped the fight in the second crucifix or in the mount, but she was moving at all times. I also recognize I should have stopped it on the first tap of the rear naked choke. I only stopped it a few seconds later. As for other people's opinion, they have their right to issue them.
Well, at least we can agree that he messed up by waiting for multiple taps to stop the fight. I mean, I'm glad we're on the same page there. Oh, my goodness. So, I mean, okay, so you can talk about, it's pretty bad reasoning when it comes to the crucifix, but like the whole, oh, she was moving and defending herself, whatever. I mean, it's pretty BS.
Dave,
but that's still better. Yeah.
She was defending punches with her face. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, exactly, man. She's got a hard head, and I mean, that was her best chance of victory, is getting Valentina Shevchenko to injure her hand. Oh, but man, it's like the quote of, I wanted her to be a warrior, is such a insane quote from an official. Holy, like, this guy's sole job is to officiate this contest, ensure that nothing, you know, that this fight is stopped at an appropriate time. And if he cares about emotional things like being a warrior, and that's like one of your veteran referees the sport has ever seen, like, this is like Mario, I mean, you know, Yamasaki. I mean, you have the opportunity to go down as like a legendary referee, as a big John McCarthy, but it's clear based on the late run in his career that he is very much slipping into the Steve Mazzagatti, you know, dark hole, which is, you know, the like, he has become a Steve Mazzagatti, Kim Winslow type, which is kind of sad to see. But that quote like that is just kind of so dumb and so inexcusable. And it's like, if you make the mistake during the moment, Jason, I'm interested to see what you say afterwards. But if you show that kind of poor judgment after you have time to cool down and think, that's really troubling.
It is. I mean, look, and people are going to hear it in my conversation with Angelo Reyes. And, you know, the fight I always bring up is JDS and Kane. And I think this fight's another example of this. And look, and I'm not someone who sits here and cusses on the podcast. It's just not something to do, but I think it just ultimately emphasizes my point here. Do you have people in your corner that give a shit about you? Because you look at that fight, I would hope there are people close to Priscilla that are now looking at her corner going, do you have the right people in your corner? You know, they may be able to get you ready for a fight, whatnot, but, you know, and I think this goes back to fighter pay in terms of, hey, you know, if you win, your money gets doubled. I think that's part of it. You know, by the way, Valentina did get a performance of the night bonus for this one. So I guess UFC ultimately, you know, emphasizing what they did here. But there's just, I think the synopsis of the story is there's not just one person to blame. There's multiple people to blame of why we saw that. I mean, could you imagine if someone was flipping around the television set on Saturday night and they just happened to turn on FS1 at that point and they're seeing this? I mean, what do you think they're thinking of this sport?
Yeah, it's something that validates everything John McCain said in, you know, what, the late 1990s or early 2000s, whenever he called it, what, human cockfighting? Like that, yeah. Like that's right up John McCain's alley, you know? Like that is not a great look when you see the little live tab on there. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm watching a homicide live on TV. It's a bad look. And again, it's like crazy because it's this thin line between the biggest takeaway either being Valentina Shevchenko is a world beater and she continues to improve upon every fight. And she is just, no one's going to be able to stand with her. No one's going to be able to defend themselves off their back against her. And she is just the best. But because the stoppage and the officiating and the corner from Priscilla was so poor, the takeaway then becomes a more negative story. And you begin to analyze the culture of the sport when it comes to the corners and just the sheer incompetence of the official in there. It's just like boxing, mixed martial arts is a sport where the official, an incompetent official means much more than any other sport. It's not 10 yards. It's not a touchdown. It's literal brain damage. It's literal injury that an incompetent official can allow. And it's really a shame. And again, I don't know what the damage was done for Priscilla. I don't know how she's feeling today and whether or not I didn't even see how long her medical suspension was.
Well, it looks like she's got an ACL injury, so she's going to be out for some time. And, you know, it's one of these things where you do wonder, can she recover from this? Can she, you know, and I talk to fighters all the time and they all say, you know, it's the losses that ultimately, you know, make you a better martial artist. I think the question is, can she move on from this and can she ultimately become a top 10, top 5, 125 pound fighter? And that's really the big question mark.
It's a big question mark. And it's something where it's going to be hard to put too much weight into this fight because we still don't really know where Priscilla stood before this fight took place in this weight class. She was such an unknown, a fighter with very little experience against name opponents. So prior to taking on Valentina, we did not have a good sense of where Priscilla was going to stack up at women's flyweight. So it's going to be hard to say how big of an effect this fight actually had just because we don't even know where she was going to be in the first place. I will say I find it hard to believe watching this fight that she's going to be able to contend against the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fighters at flyweight. But this very well could be a division where there is a really big gap among the elite and the rest of the weight class. And that's kind of where if she gets healed up, Priscilla can find herself with improvement, learning a lot from a loss. But again, to be realistic about it, this was a squash match, and there wasn't a whole lot of positives to take away from other than she survived against someone in Shevchenko, who is the odds-on favorite to be the women's flyweight champion.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I love to do on this podcast is to get different perspectives, and that's what I did this week. I reached out to Angelo Reyes, who is a coach, striking coach for Frank Mir and Anna Houlton. I talked to him about this situation. You know, get it from a coach's perspective. So we want you to hear that conversation right now. Also, we did talk about Anna's fight next Friday night at Bellator 194 against Heather Hardy. Angelo, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. Wanted to get a coach's view on one of the biggest topics in MMA this week. For people who do not know, Angelo is a MMA striking coach and boxing coach. He's a coach of Frank Mir and Anna Houlton, who will be fighting next week at Bellator 194 against Heather Hardy. I wanted to bring in Angelo and give that different mindset. Angelo, I appreciate time. One of the things I have always pointed out is that there's a culture in MMA where coaches just don't throw in the towel. There are some coaches that will say, if I see it, I will protect my fighter. Of course, this has become a big story because of what we saw last Saturday night at the UFC event. As a coach, Is it something that it's a case-by-case basis with your fighter and having that conversation? Or is your mindset, look, if my guy or girl is getting beat up, I'm not afraid to stop the fight?
Yeah, no. Well, first off, thanks for having me on, Jason. It's always fun to be on your show. And you know, it's a bit of a loaded question because, as you know, I was coming from the boxing world, having had a chance to work with Freddie Roach, and then going into the MMA world, and of course, you get a high profile fighter like a Frank Mir to talk about you. The mindsets are different, and now that I've been in MMA for a few years, I can kind of see that. To answer the question, number one, remember that MMA is still a very young sport. So everything is still evolving, and that would include coaching, and that would include education. So I'm not saying the toughness of the coaches or the toughness of the fighters is what's really in question. I think that, again, in order for our sport of MMA to continue to grow, we actually need fighters to make it. You know, we don't want them getting seriously hurt. And unlike in boxing, where losing is a really bad option, in MMA, I mean, look at Mark Hunt. He's got, like, I believe, what is it, 12 losses or 13 losses. And someone like Chael Sonnen's got losses. And, you know, like, losses aren't looked upon as badly as it would be in boxing. So I do think that what happened with the Valentina fight, first of all, I don't understand the matchmaking. I'm not saying that was just a fluke and the lady that Valentina was beating up maybe was better and just wasn't as good. I heard that she had an injury, so she had a torn meniscus. But even with that being said, I personally know fighters who I've worked with who have also gotten in fights who in where they won the fight and they had a torn meniscus. You know what I mean? And I saw people like Michael Chandler who got kicked by Brett Primus and he's still trying to fight. So, you know, it's not like we haven't seen scenarios like that before too. So I don't know if I could use the whole injury thing as an excuse for why she was beat up so badly. And nothing, obviously can't take anything away from Valentina Shevchenko, who I believe is one of the best female fighters in the world right now. You know, I mean, she's freaking amazing. And for her to cut down to 125, I'm sure she's just loving life that she's finally getting a chance to fight at the weight class that she feels, you know, at her very best. I mean, if you want to really think about it too, someone like Valentina was beating up on someone like Joanna Jędrzejczyk when they were fighting each other in the Muay Thai kickboxing realm. So you know, a fight like that, I don't know if as a co-main event that is a matchup that really should have been made at 125. There were other 125 names that you could have put out there. Maybe it wouldn't have been as bad for someone like a Barb Honchak to get in there. You know what I'm saying? Like somebody who actually just came from the TUF or proved that they were already, you know, okay at 125. Now, B, once Shevchenko did start beating her up pretty badly, you know, and you saw, like, what was the number? 257 to 1 on strikes at the end of the first round or something insane like that, right?
I remember in the unofficial stats, I believe it was midway through the second round, it was 216 to 1. I think it ended up being 230 to 3 overall. For me, matchmaking has to be question mark. With this fight, clearly, you have to look at the referee. And you can speak about this. Every time the referee comes in for that pre-fight interview with the fighter, you know, back in the locker room, they always say that I'm here to protect you. And there is no way you can say Mario protected Priscilla in that fight.
Yeah, no. I mean, here's where, okay, so I'll even in a way, and I agree 100%. So, you know, for anybody listening who's like, Angelo's crazy. Look, first of all, the fight should have been stopped. I mean, I'm already telling you guys, maybe looking at hindsight, I don't even know if that particular matchup should have ever even been made, looking at the hindsight. But let's say the lady that got beat up, I'm forgetting her name, I'm sorry, Priscilla, right? It's Priscilla. Let's say she's better than the way she performed. And that's why the match was made. Okay, fine. If she was injured, I don't know how she got by the commission. Because usually, like in boxing, they even make you like squat down and squat up like 2 days before the fight, stuff like that. So I don't know how she got by the commission to pass if she tore her meniscus. Or so maybe. And then let me just say, maybe it wasn't torn until after the first round. So maybe that's the case too. Like, oh man, I think I tore my knee. So now it becomes this question of, let's say Mario Yamasaki didn't stop the fight because Mario feels like, hey man, fighters, you got to give them a chance. And maybe, and again, I'd have to really do a lot of research on this one. Maybe that lady, Priscilla, was an amazing submission artist and has shown that she could come from behind and win via submission. So maybe that's why Mario didn't stop it. But here's my old but. If my fighter comes to me at the end of the first and then says to me, hey man, I think I tore my knee, and we just came off of a round where your ass has gotten beat up pretty badly. Let's say, I would just stop it. I would just say that, you know, I'm from the school of Freddie Roach, where you tell the fighter, look, man, I'm going to stop the fight. You're not showing me anything. I'm going to stop the fight. I saw Freddie just recently do that when I came to visit him and he was training John Pascal. I remember it was the second fight with John Pascal fighting. I'm forgetting the person's name that he fought in Montreal now. I think it was Sergey Kovalev. Over in Montreal. But anyways, Freddie had even given him the speech that, hey, I will do this. And if you show me that you can't fight back, I'm going to stop the fight. So I would have stopped it. But let's just go with, okay, as a coach, you didn't want to stop it. You don't want to make it seem like your fighter is being weak. You know, let's go with all of that, right, Jason? It wouldn't have been that hard to go to the doctor and say, hey, doctor, I need you to come over here and check on my fighter. Then the doctor would have came up, and then the doctor would have said, what's the concern? The fighter would have said, I think I did something with my knee. The doctor would have played with the knee, and then the doctor would have just stopped it anyways. So it wouldn't have been the coach stopping it, and it wouldn't have been the fighter stopping it. It would have been the doctor stopping it. And then it would have been doctor stoppage, right? So I don't know why even that didn't transpire. I do know the coach that was in that corner. It's Jessica Andrade's coach. So, and as you know, they're a very tough gym out there in Brazil with Piranha Valley Tudo. And obviously he's shown that he's a good coach with what he's been able to do with someone like a Jessica Andrade. So, so maybe even in that, maybe he knew his fighter had a chance to possibly score a submission. So maybe that's why he didn't stop it. But hindsight being what it ended up being, you know, of course, everybody's going to say, Jesus, man, why didn't you guys stop it? You should have stopped it. Mario, you should have stopped it. But there were definitely many different ways to have not have had this happen. And keep in mind, in the sport of MMA, it actually is okay to quit. We just don't call it quitting. We call it tapping out. You know what I'm saying? So you could either get choked out and be a baller and be a gangster like Holly Holm did with Misha Tate. Or you could just quit like Conor McGregor did to Nate Diaz. I mean, either way, though, it didn't hurt. It's not like it hurt Nate's, Connor's marketability when he clearly, not being a grappler, shot for a takedown against Nate Diaz, of all people. And then just to turn around, give him his back. And then once Nate had the choke, he tapped out. Totally different from when Holly Holm was completely winning the fight. And had it gone to decision, she would have probably easily won 4-1. On the judges' scorecards. And even still, man, when Misha Tate got that hold, Holly wasn't tapping out. She was like, you're going to have to choke my ass out. You know what I mean? So there is that. So now in boxing, as you know, Rigondeaux is getting hammered for quitting on the Lomachenko fight. All right? And here's the thing. I thought that fight should have been stopped. So if anybody should get blamed worse, maybe Lomachenko's coach should have said Rigondeaux's coach should have said to Rigondeaux, hey, bro, you're way smaller. He's way faster than we thought. You've been getting your ass beat for the last five rounds. I think I'm just going to stop the fight now. You know, so for Regan now to do the actual correct thing, you know, where he doesn't want to have to risk his health worse than he needed to, he's getting blasted by everyone. It's kind of like the Roberto Duran no mask story, right? So there's the flip side to it too, man. So like in the boxing world, you 100% cannot quit, which is why you have to have a good coach be able to go, sorry, bro, I'm throwing in the towel. Versus in MMA, I believe a coach cannot throw it in the towel, right? So if in the middle, if 1 minute into the first round, I don't think Dillard Piranha could have thrown a towel over the cage, right? It's against the rules or something.
It's not in the unified rules, but I have asked executive directors and referees about this, and they have all told me that if they see a towel come in, they will stop the fight. They will honor the towel. They will honor the coach. The last time I remember a towel being thrown in, you have to go back about 5 or 6 years ago when Nate Diaz fought Josh Thompson. Nick was actually throwing in the towel as Josh was knocking Nate out. A lot of people forget about this. I want to say it was a Fox card, and literally as Nick was throwing in the towel, Josh landed a head kick and ultimately ended the fight. It's just something you do not see. The example I bring up most is Cain Velasquez versus Junior Dos Santos, the second and third fight where Cain beat the living crap out of JDS. I was sitting there going, does someone in JDS's corner care about him? Because he's getting battered. Someone please stop this fight. I say this, sometimes a fighter can be too tough for their own good.
Right. Right. And you know what? And that's what fighters are supposed to do too. And I'm glad you told me that rule, by the way, because I was on Phone Booth fighting with Frank Mir and Richard Hunter on their show. And I remember having this conversation with Frank where I'm like, because Frank always messes with me about this, where he's like, well, you know, in the MMA cage, you can't throw in the towel. And I always tell Frank, and because Frank's philosophy is, I would rather it be 1 second too late than 1 second too soon. And again, my philosophy is I'd rather it be 1 second too soon and you get mad at me because I stopped the freaking fight, because I'm not going to look at your own daughter and say, yeah, I could have stopped it, but I'm sorry I didn't. And now your dad's in the hospital, you know? So that's where both of our philosophies kind of differ. And then I've joked around about it with Frank where I said, well, I don't give a damn, dude. If it looks bad, I'm jumping over the cage and I'm waving the fucking towel in front of whoever the ref is. And I'll take the suspension because, you know, it's in this industry and in this fight game, it's too effing dangerous. And there is that, like Shevchenko was ground and pounding her so badly that maybe the damage was even worse now. I mean, I saw a picture with a Priscilla in a wheelchair. So I don't know, man. I mean, like I don't know how bad it was. I'd have to know what the doctor ended up saying. Maybe it just looks worse than what the doctor said. But good for Nick Diaz. And again, that's his brother, right? Your brother's not going to let you just get your ass beat, you know? So
I am not someone that cusses on a podcast, but I'll say this. You want someone in your corner that gives a shit about you. Someone who is not just there for a paycheck. Someone who legitimately cares about you. And I believe it's an ACL injury for Priscilla. After the first round, she did tell her coach that her knee was hurting her. After the opening round, they did not know the serious that the injury was. But at the end of the day, unfortunately, this is the topic of the fight. It's not that Valentina looked like the best 125-pound fighter in the world.
Yeah, it's hard to argue, brother. It's really hard to argue that one right now. Because, you know,
I really hope they do not put Nico Montana against her to defend the title. It may be just as brutal. The crazy thing is that the UFC has not promoted her at all. But I do also want to talk to you. Of course, you are in the middle of two training camps. You have Honor preparing to take on Heather Hardy next week at Bellator 194. And Frank Mir is set to face Fedor Emelianenko in April. Next week's fight, the storyline is the fact that it is part one of, and part two will be at a date to be determined. Of course, this one MMA with Anna and Heather. Then they will fight in boxing, we hope, later this year. And for the fans who did not see Anna's first fight in Bellator, what should they expect to see in this one?
Well, you know, for all the fans, all you guys have to do is type in ANAJULATON on any of our social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and she's been putting live workouts out there at the Mayweather show. And she's 100% in every interview, as you know, Jason, as saying, look, man, pretty easy game plan. Everybody wants to see me. I'm tired of everybody saying they haven't seen my full boxing in an MMA cage yet. So you're about to see it. So the question really is going to be, is Heather willing to do her boxing game in the MMA cage? Because Heather's, you know, working a lot at Henzo Gracie Academy, and she's always talking about, well, she's improving her skill, and she's got Glory kickboxing people working with her and jiu-jitsu people working with her, and that's great. At the end of the day, though, Heather, your bread and butter is boxing. You're 20-0 as a boxer. So the question is, are you going to do the Conor and Bale and actually try to take down someone like Anna, who's been in the wrestling room for 2 years, that's done her jiu-jitsu with Frank Mir? In fact, Henzo Gracie even talked about how good Anna's jiu-jitsu skill was on her last fight. And that's why Henzo defended Anna in saying that he felt she should have gotten the decision, and he doesn't understand why the judges gave it to Anna's opponent on a split decision. And Henzo Gracie is the one that coaches Heather Hardy. You know what I mean? Like, so at the end of the day, it's like, so here's a fighter who, in Anna Houlton, who's now going into sixth MMA fight. She's been able to go back and forth. Because she's the first fighter to ever sign that contract. As you know, she fought for one championship in 2014, and she was going back and forth. She actually did it. Like, that year in 2014, I believe, she fought three MMA matches and one boxing match, and then she went back to boxing the next year, and then she did an MMA match, so she did a one-on-one. And then the next year after that, she went into boxing, I think, like, twice or something. It's been 2 years of her being in the cage since her most recent comeback in October. Now she gets a quick turnaround, and she gets to go right back into the cage. And then she gets another quick turnaround, and she goes right back into the ring. Well, if we're just talking about who's more experienced at the back and forth, we already know Anna's more experienced with the back and forth, because she's actually used to the pace. She's used to the camp. So on this one, man, I'm excited that I know for a fact that Heather Hardy is one of the toughest athletes out there when it comes to fighting. I mean, if anyone doesn't even realize that, then you're just not watching her fights. Because if you watch the last fight with Christina Williams, you would think that with getting hit that hard in the first round, I'm not even talking about the second round where finally a doctor and a referee did the correct thing and actually stopped the fight, you know? So thank goodness that didn't end up on a ground and pound scenario. So it's really good that I believe it was the referee who stopped it, looking at the injury, but they did ask the doctor to come in. But the fact that Heather showed no weakness in being hit so hard at the end of the first round, that's another scenario where I could have easily said to you on that night, because I was there, I was in their locker room watching it. And I'm saying to myself, I remember even looking at Anna as the fight was going and saying, at the end of the first round, the bell rang. I saw, I don't want to give away too much, you know, because again, it would kind of give away some of the things, you know, Anna's been working on, but there was a couple of sequences that happened in the first round where 100% you could already tell Heather didn't know when it was coming. It's almost like she was seeing a curveball for the first time in her life, and she's never even seen it. I remember turning to Anna and at the end of the first round, and I said to her, they should stop the fight right now. I said, they should stop the fight right now because A, I think Heather's nose is broken already, and B, it's only going to get worse from here. And then obviously the stoppage ended up happening. So I feel like if I was a coach on Heather's side that night, I probably would have just stopped it. I would have just looked at her and said, hey, listen, man, Christina did A, B, and C. And not only did you not recognize it, but you look like a deer in the headlights. Like you keep doing the same move and you're not even seeing it coming. So are you okay? You know, like if Heather would have said anything like, oh, I could tough it out, coach, I might have been like, well, I think your nose is messed up. So I'm going to call a timeout and I'm going to ask the doctor to come in. And then again, this could have been a situation where I might not have even had to stop the fight. And then Heather might not have even had to stop the fight either. The doctor might have been able to come in and said, hey, man, I just checked your nose and it's jacked, so I'm stopping the fight. And then there you go. Then no drama, no blood, nothing. So this goes to my point of how much I respect Heather as a tough warrior and a tough individual, because Jesus, man, she went out there fully knowing she had been getting damaged, you know what I mean? Kind of like in Star Trek with the force field. And I think like Scotty was like sitting there going, I don't know how much more she could take, Captain, you know, like, and then Heather still went out there and fought. So I think that if that Heather Hardy shows up, I'm talking about the toughness, of course, because I would hope that she would have improved her martial arts skill by now, going into this third fight. And I do believe that she would have. I mean, she's got great coaches around her. She's in a great camp. I got nothing but great things to say about Heather Hardy's team. So she's with very smart people. So, you know, again, like, I would think that she's going to be better technically, but I'm just talking about the warrior heart part of it. That's the part we're going to have to put on question, because if she comes in with that same toughness mentality, I 100% promise you guys that this is going to be fight of the year. You're going to see something where you're going to go, wow, I can't wait to see those two ladies go at it again in a boxing ring. If what you end up seeing is the other way around, which is Heather might have just fought the wrong person now in Anna, who's been chomping at the bit to finally prove to everyone, look, man, you guys want to see my hands? You're about to fucking see my hands. You know, like so. And again, to the point where she's almost even putting it out there. She's like, you want to see how hard I'm working? Here it is. Go to Anna Hulton Official on Facebook. Go to Anna Hulton on Twitter. Like, here's how hard I'm working. And you can see, like, even today she posted something because the Mac Life was there following Anna, and you could see it in her freaking arms, man. She's like hitting the speed bag. You could just see, like, so you really think Anna's working that hard with her hands just as a trick? Of course it's not a trick. I'm pretty fucking sure she's gonna go out there and she's gonna turn it into a war, like what she's been saying. So I'm excited, man. I'm excited. She's definitely very, very excited about this fight. Her attitude and training camp has been great. I know that she gave up the holidays to start training camp, so she was already in Vegas like mid-December. She was going heavy. When she was in the Bay, she was going to AKA. She was picking the brains of Javier Mendez. Like Anna's a perpetual student of the game, so she's been talking to everyone from King Mo to Chael Sonnen and Frank Mir about, hey guys, what do you want to see me improve? What would you like to see out of me? You know, so as a fan, even, I'm just excited to see this fucking fight, man, because I think we're going to see a really great Heather Hardy come out and fight and really phenomenal Anna Hulton. And I think that, again, so long as you know, the other side, because, you know, on our side, win or lose, Anna already has it hung on the hook that win or lose, she definitely wants to see the boxing match because it's historical and she's going to do it. So the question will be, let's say Heather, and I won't know until fight night, but if Heather gets beat up pretty badly and her nose is broken again and she has to require another 35 stitches, I can only hope that she doesn't all of a sudden change her mind and pull out of the second match, because that would really actually ruin the whole point of this whole thing, which is to do back-to-back fights and kind of show the combat sports audience that there is a difference between two sports, and even the training camps would have to change, because the best case scenario out of this, I think, in terms of as a fan, would be you see an amazing 15-minute fight between the two ladies. Doesn't matter who wins, as long as it was like fight of the night and super exciting. The doctors both clear them that night, and then the promoters already announced that in 3 months they're going to be fighting each other in a boxing ring. So now you have to now take both fighters, completely change their training camps, and then everybody could actually film and do a story on the training camp, on how it switched from doing an MMA training camp and the differences of that versus them doing a boxing training camp and the differences of that. And when it comes to boxing, I know that a lot of people out there would have to have, or would at least think that Heather would be the favorite just because she's undefeated as a boxer. And even though Heather Hardy's never won a world title before versus Anna Houlton's already won three, you know, Heather's a little bit more fresh when it comes to the boxing world in terms of her own activity rate and the pace of it, you know, so I know that there are people who I'm talking about the smart analysts, you know, I'm not talking about the actual, just fanboy people who, I mean, some of the fanboy people are being ridiculous right now, 100% picking Heather to just destroy Anna. When I'm like, are you guys even looking at the stats or the sheets? Or, I mean, you know, at best, what you could say about this fight is it might be 50-50, you know, like at best. But if there was somebody who was going to be a favorite and you were analyzing it, Heather's going into her third MMA match. Anna's going into her sixth MMA match. Heather just got her nose broken and got 35 stitches. Anna didn't get hurt at all. So, you know, if we're going to pick favorites in terms of actual facts, then you should probably give the nod to Anna. But if you just want to, you know, be fair about it, you could just sit there and go, well, it's 50-50 because we don't really know what Anna's going to show up and we don't know what Heather's going to show up. And then when you flip it around on the boxing side, that would be more interesting. So again, like I said, you would think that Heather would be more of the favorite in the boxing, but I think it's freaking fun, man, because, can you imagine, like, let's say the two girls end up being 1-1, you know, and then both of them are like, you want to fight in a Bellator kickboxing match? Let's do it, you know? And then Scott Coker's like, yeah, we're going to do the flying cage in San Jose. And we're going to have Anna and Heather Hardy do a kickboxing match. You know, it could be fun. It could be one of those fun things. But yeah, going to your original question, man, training camp's been great. This is a very different Anna Houlton. She's just on another level right now, man. I mean, hopefully that shows up on fight night. But she's got amazing nutritionists at Foodie Fit here in Las Vegas. Her preparation and the nutrition she's been getting is amazing. Her partners have been crazy good. Frank Mir's really paid attention to her grappling and even some of the mistakes that Anna has to watch out for. Anna's just been doing, you know, 3-a-days and on a light day, 2-a-days, and she's not missing workouts. And her sparring partners are like all saying, fuck, man, this is the strongest we've ever felt her before, you know? So it's exciting, man. I'm excited. Can you tell, Jason? I'm pretty excited about next week.
There is definitely a little excitement in your voice. You still have another week before you head to the Mohegan Sun. And of course, the fight between Anna and Heather will be on the main card of Bellator 194. Angelo, I appreciate time and I appreciate the insight. If any of my listeners want to get in touch with you on social media, how can they do that?
Yeah, no, guys, yeah, again, as long as you stay positive, I'll respond back. On Twitter, you can find me at Reyes Striking. And on Instagram, you can find me at Reyes Boxing. And if you guys, you know, are cool and you want to reach out to me on Facebook, I'm right there, Angelo Reyes. Just again, I don't like the negative trolls, so you'll probably get blocked if you're negative. But if you want to have a positive argument or positive talks, man, I'm always happy to do that. And I always appreciate you know, your show support of our fighters, man. You're great, Jason. So thank you so much for that. And you and I are gonna have to talk about Frank Mir pretty soon. So one of these times.
And Daniel, that was my conversation with Angelo Reyes. A lot of interesting things. It's always kind of interesting to hear a coach's perspective out there. And, you know, we'll see what goes on there. But that was not the only storyline at UFC Fight Night 125. Once again, fighters missing weight is another story. The initial co-main event, John Dodson versus Pedro Munhoz, gets scratched. Pedro Munhoz misses weight by 4 pounds, says that due to the hotel not having hot water, just couldn't get the weight off him. You know, we saw Eric Anders initially miss weight, ends up coming back, you know, making weight there. We saw Michelle Prezeris miss weight by 5 pounds, I think it was. Another issue here, you know, on the John Dodson thing, I feel like the UFC at one point was penalizing the was penalizing John Dotson for his opponent missing weight. I mean, thankfully now he's getting paid, whatnot. But the other day, John Dotson honored his contract. Pedro Munhoz did not.
Yeah, this was a crazy 24 hours on social media because I was super outraged. And I still kind of am if John Dotson didn't get all of his show money. Because the news came out that John Dotson wasn't going to take this fight. It makes a lot of sense because John Dotson, I mean, this is a weight class where he isn't a big guy at bantamweight. He was facing a tough opponent in Pedro Munhoz who had missed weight by a pretty big portion, especially for a bantamweight fighter. It makes sense for Dotson not to take this fight. But the thing is, he made weight. And that to me is such an important, important factor when it comes to if you make your weight – and your opponent doesn't make your weight, you are entitled to your show money, and you are also entitled to not taking that fight. That's just my personal point of view. Just because, to me, you did your job, you fulfilled your contract, and the person that you did the contract with didn't. And again, we've mentioned it here, where when you are doing a fight for the UFC, 100% of your job isn't in the cage. That's just a small portion of the job and services you're doing for the UFC. Like, a big portion of it is the training, is the travel, is the weight cutting. So to not get paid for any of those services would have been clearly, like really awful. Now, I understand that John Dotson may have gotten partial payment. That was the news that came out of MMA Junkie.
Yeah.
I saw that. So, but even partial to me, Jason, isn't enough. I mean, you aren't paying this guy six figures.
His last disclosed pay was $41,000 for his fight against Marlon Moraes. So you got to imagine that was probably his disclosed pay. I mean, when you have a company that sold for $4 billion, you tell me you can't give a guy $40,000?
Exactly. And not only that, Jason, this is the story the day before the show, and we're going to get to this later with Max Holloway getting his fight taken away because he got injured, so we can't do Holloway Edgar. But, how do you, in one hand, treat a fighter like that, and on the other hand, look to fighters for a favor, like TJ Dillashaw or someone else? How do you do that? How do you treat fighters so poorly, especially one of your better fighters, and then put your hands out like a street beggar asking for an opportunity? Like, it's just infuriating, and it just speaks to me like, there is something really wrong with the UFC right now. I don't know who's making these decisions, and this isn't the first time we've had this discussion about a fighter making weight and not getting full payment. But I don't know who's making this decision or if it's multiple people. But, Jason, this is a big red flag, and it's just a shame. And I tell you what, it's about time we stop doing weigh-ins in the morning.
I tell you, I've had conversations with about that. I mean, I don't, you know, is can you firmly say that's the reason? I don't know. I you know, and look, I've never cut weight a day in my life, and never, you know, the only time I'm cutting weight is when I'm going to the gym and getting on the treadmill. You know, so I look, I would love to be able to cut 30, 40 pounds. That'd be great. But
yeah, in 2 days, yeah,
it would be great. But I know that's, you know, it's, but it's just one of these things of like. Like, you see the Prezera situation, and I was watching that fight because, you know, and I'll get your take on this one. Like, I felt like I was watching guys in two different weight classes. You know, Des Green doesn't really drop a lot of weight to get to 155. Prezera looked like, you know, at minimum a welterweight. But as, you know, they were talking on the broadcast about, you know, how much he was weighing on fight day. And I was thinking about, would we look at weight cutting a little different if part of the broadcast was, hey, when the guy got to the venue on fight day, this was his weight?
Yeah, I think the idea that Prezeris was like 180 pounds and Des Green was surely not or something along those lines. I think if you showed that for each and every fight, Jason, you had the maybe just a graphic that just said like weigh in today, you know, John Lineker weighed in at 170 pounds versus 135 pound opponent. I think that may change.
We see that in boxing, though.
We do. We do, and it's just – I don't know, man. I think we're probably going to see that if everybody follows suit with California, and because that becomes an important part of the sport.
And the interesting that you bring that up is because last week I had confirmed that the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations has put a parallel policy to what California is doing, and this is going to be in effect for Bellator 194 next week. And there was multiple new regulations that were put in. There'll be licensing by weight class. There'll be a second day weigh-in where they will weigh in when they get to the venue to ensure that they have not gained more than 10% plus 1 pound of their body weight between the official weigh-in and the event. The second weigh-in will occur upon the fighter arriving to the venue. Fighters who gain so much weight between weigh-in and the fight may be recommended to move to the next weight class for future bouts as directed by the ringside physicians. They will continue to do their weigh-ins. They will honor additional weight classes, 165, 175, 195, and 225. There will be a weight class restrictions that if a fighter misses weight more than once, he may or she may be required to compete at a higher weight class until a physician clarifies the weight is appropriate and is approved by the commission and or the for competition in that weight class. They'll also check dehydration for the fighters as well. And also, I talked to Mike Mazzulli about this. After the weigh-ins next Thursday, all the fighters at Bellator 194 will be speaking to the medical staff about the negative impact of rapid/severe weight loss. So, I know that this is going to be a major talking point at the ABC meeting in July, which is going to be in Orlando this year. And it'll be, if Nevada ends up doing the 10-point plan as well, this is going to alter the UFC.
Yeah, I think these are the big dogs in the sport that I think really influence what happens moving forward. And I guess, Jason, I kind of like this a whole lot, because I tend to think this is the best way to solve the issue of weight cutting. I don't think it's going to be a perfect fix, but by God, this has been a problem that we've faced since Like weight cutting has been a major issue, mm-hmm. and it's not something where the solution is perfect or clear. But I will say, I am very optimistic about this idea, and it just seems like California has got it going on, and they really have a solid think tank going on. So what we really need, obviously, is much more of a unified approach when it comes to regulation. That's an understatement.
That's funny. Come on. You know that ain't going to happen.
I know it ain't going to happen. But it's such a weird thing, okay? Because, that would be great. But the downside is, I think if we had much more of a unified approach, there'd be a lot less room for creativity and, single people allowing their ideas to actually get put into fruition. Whereas with states, there's more of a freedom.
I'll tell you, Daniel, I have talked to some people in the industry that are, absolutely against the 10-point plan. I do wonder, are we going to be 10, 15, 20 years from now where people are going to be looking at this generation of MMA and weight cutting and are going to kind of look and go, what the hell were those people doing back then?
Yeah, I think so, man. Because every single week we are having fights get canceled or fighters miss weight, and sometimes even worse news. It's clear this isn't working, and it becomes a story every week. And maybe this past week the reason was the hotel didn't have hot water. But this week didn't feel unique because of a fight getting canceled and a fighter missing weight and a headliner having trouble making weight. So, yeah, absolutely. This is a bad time, but it's been a bad time for a very long time. And that's why I kind of talk back to the early weigh-ins may not be the best idea, just because it does appear as though more fighters are missing weight now, but maybe that's just how it always seems like in the present. Fighters are always missing weight and fights are always getting canceled. Maybe that's just a bias we have that in the present, the problems always feel worse in the present, but they're always bad.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like every week we talk this topic.
Absolutely. And it's, again, it's a shame because there were some positives here, but this card was just filled with a whole lot of negatives. And it's a lot of it's just negatives that are caused by the systematic issues the sport does have, especially the UFC.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of issues. We really haven't even talked about the fights, quite honestly. The main event, the scoring of the main event, it seems like Lyoto Machida finds himself in these fights when they go to the distance where they're very close. Not a robbery. The 49-46 card, I don't know what the hell that judge was watching. But, you know, I know there's people say, oh, it's because of Brazil, but Tony Weeks is ultimately the guy who decided this scorecard, and he's an American, so you can't really play that into it. I edged it out for Eric Anders. I thought he took it 48-47. No problem if you have the fight, for Lyoto Machida. But Machida just finds himself in these kind of fights.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like the judges give him extra points for making a fight boring. It's really a weird situation that not only does he find himself in these fights, but like he tends to win them. Maybe because Machida has this reputation of being this really conservative striker that when a fight plays out like this, someone that's judging the fight just assumes, well, this is what Lyoto wants because he always fights like this. Maybe there's some weird bias, but this was a close one, man. I picked Lyoto headed into it, but I will tell you that I had it 48-47 for Eric Anders. I thought he won the middle three rounds, and I think he could throw 1-5 Lyoto's way. That's kind of how I would score this contest.
I think for everyone, it came down to the second round. That was really the round that you pointed to of whether, you know, or not you're going to win that fight. But, I did like Lyoto's call out of Michael Bisping. I was like, okay, that fight makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly could see that one happening. I don't think if I'm Michael Bisping, that's the fight I most want.
It sounds like they're going to do Bisping and Rashad.
Wow. I don't know if that's the fight I don't want either if I'm Bisping, but
what's Rashad Evans at this point?
Yeah, no. Well, then I guess you look at Bisping and it's like, what do you want to do? Do you want to put yourself in the best position to get a victory and end it with a win? And if so, then your likely opponent is either Evans or Machida. Those are the two names I would go towards. I don't know, but do you want a fight that matters more?
Take this one in. Mm-hmm. November 16th, 2013. You want to know what that date was?
Rashad Evans' last victory?
Yeah, Shel Sonnen. Since then, a decision loss to Ryan Bader. Knockout against defeated by Glover Teixeira. Then he's lost back-to-back split decisions against Dan Kelly and Sam Alvey.
Jesus, that is truly, it's crazy, man. I mean, that's the most likely scenario where Bisping ends with the clear win. Sure, this.
Rashad is 2-6 in his last 8 fights.
Jeez, and this is a chance where if he loses, you're talking 2-9. I just don't know, man. That's not a fight I would go towards. I just don't even know if Rashad Evans matters a whole lot anymore. And I don't know if Machida does either.
To me, if you're UFC, you just keep using them in Brazil. I mean, I know you wanted to mention this. We've talked about a lot about the negative things come out of this card. Mm-hmm. But what was the good news to come out of this card?
You know, I mean, well, first off, Eric Anders didn't look great, but a lot of this fight played out in the feed, and he more than held his own against a solid striker, a really good striker in Lyoto. So this was certainly a negative for Eric Anders, but moving forward, he's still young in his career, so this isn't the end of the road for him. But in terms of the positives, firstly, I will absolutely not mention Timothy Johnson. Oh my God, that fight was awful. But enough negativity. Let's talk positivity. What were the positives? Okay.
Good night for Brazilian MMA.
Yes, absolutely. I thought Thiago. I mean, I'll end with Santos and Anthony Smith, and I'll throw that one at you because that was the highlight of the entire card. Yeah. But Pollyanna Viana at women's strawweight just completely ran through Maya Stevenson, and Viana has a whole lot of charisma to her. She finishes pretty much all of her fights, and she got a first round sub at women's strawweight. Viana's a name to look after. Yuri Alcantara just dominated in 66 seconds over Joe Soto. Could be the end of the line for Joe Soto. Sergio Moraes and Tim Means was a really fun fight to watch. it was a matchup in which Moraes' stand-up was much better than I thought it was, and he really held his own. It was close. You could have scored it for Tim Means, but Moraes looked good. I thought probably the second best or third best fight of the night was Douglas Andrade versus Marlon Vera. Just a really enjoyable contest. And Douglas Andrade really improved a lot at bantamweight here and won all three rounds against Marlon Vera. Although I think he could have gave round three to Marlon. But without a doubt, the highlight of the entire night was Thiago Santos versus Anthony Smith. If you guys haven't seen this card, the only thing you really need to watch is Thiago Santos versus Anthony Smith, because it was just so great, man. A back-and-forth first round and then a very early finish in the second round. Absolutely love this fight. You can guarantee violence anytime you put Thiago Santos and Anthony Smith on your card.
Yeah, that was a fun fight to watch there. You mentioned Joe Soto. That was his last fight on his UFC deal. Probably going to find his way. Davison Figueiredo on the Fight Pass prelims, very dominating performance there. Someone to watch for there at 125 pounds. But, of course, Daniel, the UFC train will keep rolling. We'll get into UFC 221. Do want to mention last Friday night CES 48 took place. Greg Rebello wins the heavyweight title there. 23-second knockout win against Travis View. I do have an interview already up on themareport.com that I did talk to Greg about that matchup, and so you can check out what he had to say there. Also, I talked to Rico Desculo, who got a win on this fight card where, a first-round victory, but I thought it was a little bit of a quick stoppage there. I mean, I think that the stoppage was coming for Rico. But that was one there. And, of course, Tim Caron got the I was joking with Tim. I talked to him the other day, and I said, did you ever think you'd get on World Star? And that's what happened. Got on World Star because of what happened in that one.
Oh, man.
But, yeah.
If you guys haven't seen it, that to me was the coolest thing that happened the entire weekend. I mean, not for Timothy Woods, but Timothy Woods goes for the throw on poor Tim Caron. And, well, it's poor Tim Woods. He lands straight on his head and knocks himself out. World Star. Man, I tell you what, that was a good little CES card, Jason. I thought, aside, some of the decisions were a bit taxing to watch, but more than not, I mean, you had a bunch of quick finishes. And look, Travis Yu looked really bad against Greg Rebello. That's all I'll say, man. I mean, he was shot in for a takedown and just kind of stood there, like on his knees, and just got pounded out like in 23 seconds. Like, I don't know how this guy's going to make it to 100 fights. I mean, Greg Rebello just straight up pasted him, but there were quite a few like dominant performances, and I thought he looked good. Caron looked good. Desculo looked good, and even the co-main event,
Dennis Paiva, yeah. And I got an interview coming with him as well.
Ooh.
Look, I'll say this: I think Greg Rebello, because of his style, I think he ends up in the UFC in 2018. I don't know if it'll be his next fight. It could depend on maybe if there's, someone that falls out. But I think because of his style, he's going to be in the UFC in 2018.
Yeah, I like his I like his trunks, too. Kind of looks like he has, like, boxing trunks on.
Yeah,
cool trunks. I mean, he's going to have to give those away. But, yeah, this is a weight class that absolutely is thin at heavyweight along the fringes. And he's not getting any younger at 35 years old. And I think Greg Rebello, as long as he's fighting outside of the UFC, more often than not, he's going to get these finish stoppage victories. And at some point, probably before he hits the age of 40, I think he will return to the UFC, but probably a whole lot sooner.
35 is like prime for heavyweight.
It's true. That is absolutely true, Jason. That would make him like roughly the fourth youngest heavyweight.
I mean, he might be the youngest guy in the heavyweight tournament in Bellator.
Oh my gosh, he would, man. He may end up being the winner of the tournament. It's would you be shocked, Jason, if Greg Rebello ends up winning as a late replacement?
I don't see Greg Rebello in Bellator.
Well, is there heat between them?
I think he's like a lot of fighters. Wants to get to the UFC. I mean, you're 35 years old. And you're in the position that Greg Rebello is in. I mean, probably that's where the mindset is. I mean, like Manny Bermudez, who signed with the UFC this week, who's a great New England prospect, is going to fight Albert Morales on the UFC Orlando card. I was watching an interview with him about a week or two ago, and he made it clear. He said, "Look, it's UFC or bust for me," and for a lot of fighters, that's where it is.
And that's interesting because, like, I almost feel like Bellator has a bit of momentum compared to the UFC right now.
But you,
like, but the viewership isn't there, but still.
Yeah, but this is, I think, the problem that, and I've heard this, is the feeling is, can you get three fights a year in Bellator?
Yeah, that's true, and that's kind of the scuttlebutt that goes around the managers that are in control of these fighters' contracts. And it's, again, it's like a relationship industry. You know, a lot of these managers have an absurd amount of fighters. So if you do burn a bridge with just one manager, I mean, you're doing away with so many different potential clients.
Yeah, but it was a good weekend of fights, and but now we move forward to UFC 221. Before we get into this card, I'm going to let you hear my conversation with Ben Wynn, who's, of course, going to be a part of the FS1 prelims, which will be on Saturday night here in the United States, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Will be the first fight on the FS1 prelims. It takes on Jussier Formiga, so I had a chance to talk to Ben about his matchup coming up on Saturday night at UFC 221. Ben, as always, man, appreciate the time. I guess, once again, this is probably going to be another familiar role for you in the UFC, the underdog. Do you ever feel that kind of people just, you know, they aren't recognizing who you are and your abilities? Is it ever something that comes across your mind?
Yeah, all the time. You know, I get it quite a bit. You know, a lot of people come up to me and then they know me through like the viral video thing, you know, and they're like, oh, what about, you know, top eight in the UFC, you know? So, I feel like I do kind of get looked over sometimes, and it's a bit disappointing, but we're getting there. We're getting, as closer we get to the top, you know, more and more people are starting to recognize, and we're going to get there. People are going to know.
Is it concerning to you that there's going to be a section of the fan base, when they think of your name, is always going to think about that viral video?
Not really, man. Like, it doesn't worry me. It's just, you know, it's kind of a cool thing to get recognized for. But you know, like, I think once I keep fighting more and fighting tougher dudes, like, people are going to know, like, oh, this guy's legit. And you know, so it's only a matter of time.
And I think for a lot of people, it was your last fight that kind of got everyone saying, okay, you know, Ben's a top 10 guy. He's a guy someone need to be paying attention to. You know, as you think about your performance in that matchup, what are you most impressed with what you were able to accomplish in that fight?
I think redirecting Tim Elliott's craziness, you know, like, he came at me like he does everyone, just, you know, chin down, hands up, you know, ready to throw down. And, you know, he tried to take me down. I rolled through it, you know, ended up on top, took his back. And then he started rolling around like a crazy man, trying to get me off his back. And, you know, I just kind of rode it out, literally rode him out a bit. And then, I remember he was standing, I was still on his back. And, you know, I was like, holy crap, I'm on Tim Elliott's back. and then I got the choke in, and it was like, once he fell, I knew I had it, and it was just downhill from there. It was finished, and that's when I knew I had it. And so it's super exciting fight.
Because of Tim's unique style, I guess would be one way to describe it. Is preparing for Jussier here a little easier than preparing for Tim?
Absolutely. I think it's a big, I feel like Tim Elliott is one of the more dangerous fighters in the flyweight division. Just wasn't able to show it just yet. I think this is the second time with the UFC, you know, after the flyweight Ultimate Fighter show. You know, he showed like his skills, but not a lot of people paid attention to that one as much as they should have. But like, yeah, I felt like he's a lot more dangerous than Jussier Formiga. You know, Tim Elliott was a wild card. You know, you never knew what he was going to give you. Whereas Jussier, he's got one good weapon, is that's his back taking abilities and his rear naked choke. So that's the one thing we've been focusing on, is just shutting that down, and yeah, making sure he doesn't get on the back, make sure he doesn't take us down, and then just punch him.
How many rear naked choke attempts have you probably fought off in this training camp?
Man, more than I can count, man. I remember sometimes coming out of training sessions, and my neck was just so sore from just hanging on to people hanging on to my necks for a long time and just riding it out. But yeah, I think it's really been paying off. You know, no one's been able to choke me out for a while now, so pretty excited. Had black belts on my back and stuff, like no problem.
Obviously, a key to victory for you in this matchup is staying away from that technique that he does have. What would you label as other keys to victory for you in this matchup?
I think just staying with the punches and stuff, just kind of like avoiding his big shot. He's got big power shots that he likes to throw, like from out in the open. Like he'll just swing for the fences. So just moving with that and getting away from those punches and limiting, you know, the angles that he can take on me to able to throw those punches.
A win here puts you, as Dana White likes to say, in the mix. Yeah, top five win. You know, while it's not official yet, but it does sound like Demetrius Johnson, TJ Dillashaw is going to fight in July. As someone who is in the division, is there a little part of you that says, man, I wish DJ would wait around for my fight to finish before deciding what's next for him?
Man, not really. I think it's going to be an interesting fight. And you know, we all do want to see it, but I think DJ is going to end up on top. And once I get a shot at DJ and beat him, you know, it's just going to make it sweeter knowing that DJ beat TJ, the bantamweight champion. So it could be like, you know, I could be like the king of the flyweights and bantamweights. So,
no, you like to play video games, of course. You know, DJ has his stream on Twitch. Have you ever considered, like, man, maybe I need to go on his Twitch stream and maybe nudge him a little bit?
Yeah, I have actually. I play the same game that he plays right now. It's that PUBG, Player Unknown's Battleground, that survival game. Yeah, I've always thought about like just going on there and like trolling him. You know, you can drive around in vehicles in this game and like honk your horn. So if I saw him like playing, like I could find out where he is on the map and just drive over to him and just drive around in circles and just honk my horn and just to annoy him, like, DJ, give me that belt, you know.
Sometimes you do have to kind of go to the next level, but you know, of course, this fight card on Saturday here in the United States, I'm sure you've probably seen it. Fans are down on this fight card. Why would you say that fans need to tune in on Saturday night?
Why? Because I'm fighting on it, and I'm one of the more exciting fights. Look, I don't know why they put me in the prelims. I was really disappointed by that, but. Yeah, you can tune in to. I'm kicking off the Fox Sports prelims, so I guess you can see me earlier.
Now, of course, that's here in the evening in the United States. What time would that be locally when you step into the octagon?
Pretty sure it's gonna be 9 a.m. So it's gonna be an early morning start because you know they want us on the buses by like stupid o'clock, and yeah, they just want us there like 4 hours before.
Did you alter your training to get prepared for knowing like, hey, I've got to be ready to go very early in the morning for competition?
Yeah, you know, I've been doing some sessions in the morning and stuff, and sometimes I get up at 5 to go train at 6, and so it's just knowing and like you got to know like how your body digests food in the morning, and you just got to be prepared to eat like certain foods that will digest easier and quicker in the morning because it's not going to be a lot of time. Like I'm going to try to sleep in as late as possible. We've been making a few adjustments for that.
Final thing, and really appreciate your time. If any of my listeners were ever going to plan a trip to go to Australia, what would you tell them is like the one thing they got to do?
One thing they got to do, holy crap. One thing, see some kangaroos. I think that was the coolest thing was like, you can see them in the zoo, which is cool. Like, cause you can go up and like you can pet them and stuff like that. But if you see one in the wild, it's like the coolest thing. Like, he's like, holy crap. It's like your Steve Irwin kind of thing. You're like, oh, look at that. It's a fucking kangaroo, you know?
it being someone my age, now seeing his son doing TV is just crazy to me.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool, hey, yeah.
I remember being in like high school and seeing Steve Irwin doing shows and his little boy there, and now he's all grown up. It's, getting old.
Interesting fact, my jiu-jitsu coach... my main coach, he trained Steve Irwin in the day.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned that the last time we talked.
Yeah. So sometimes we'll get some cool stories at the end of training about him and Steve and going out in the bush and like wrestling crocodiles and stuff. It's really, really cool. My eyes just perk up and yeah.
It takes a special type of person to have that mindset. I'm going to go wrestle a crocodile. And I don't have that mindset.
Yeah, I go somewhere else.
But, of course, fans are going to be able to watch your fight come up here on Saturday on Fox Sports as you'll be taking on Juicier Formiga. Ben, as always, man, I appreciate the time. Let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Ben10MMA. That's Ben10MMA. So follow me. Thanks for my sponsor Onnit, Fight Brain, and Astro Honda for giving me a car to drive.
Awesome. Awesome, man. As always, man, appreciate time and look forward to seeing your fight on Saturday night.
All right, thank you.
Daniel, there you have my conversation with Ben Wynn. And, you know, when you look at this UFC 221 card, I mean, look, as a pay-per-view, it's not a fight card that people are going to get excited by. You know, one of the questions I asked Ben was, hey, what would your response to people be of why they should tune in to watch your fight? I mean, you know, when I look at this fight card overall, I absolutely love the main event. Absolutely love it. But the rest of the card, it's just, man... I don't blame anyone who doesn't fork over $65 to watch this event.
I blame someone who does. Oh my God, this card sucks.
How much better would this card be if it was either on Fox or FS1?
Well, I think we would still say the same thing, Jason. I think we would still say this is a one fight card. This card is not good. This is not much different than the last two fight night cards we've previewed.
Like, as a... You know, it's, you know, pay-per-view is a premium product. And, you know, and of course, we've talked about how the standard price for UFC pay-per-views in HD now here in the United States is $64.99. You're telling me I got to pay the same price for UFC 221 as I did UFC 220? Everyone has their own decision whether they buy this pay-per-view, and I don't think people are going to really listen to us or whether they're ultimately going to buy or not buy a pay-per-view, but I can just tell you for me, as a consumer, I don't see how I can fork over $65. I'd rather just go to a sports bar on Saturday night, spend $20 or $30 on food and drinks and an Uber ride and take it in that way.
Man, I really hope my local Buffalo Wild Wings shows this fight because they show up every UFC, but they may look at the lineup and they may be like, hey, let's pass on UFC 221 and UFC 222. Like, dude, I wonder what would do a bigger buy rate, this pay-per-view or UFC 222 if they end up doing Edgar Ortega.
Oh, man.
And, I mean, I just wonder what these numbers are going to be because –
I think this is going to be kind of, you know, what's the absolute lowest number? I mean, I can tell you this, and I talk about this on a podcast. I do marketing for a sports bar, and you know, we were on a call last Saturday morning about what we were doing for Super Bowl and you know how many reservations we had, you know, things along those lines. And you know, I said, hey guys, just remember, you know, tonight we have a UFC event on cable, prelims on FS2, main card on FS1. One of the comments on the call was, why can't they just put the fights on the same channel? I go, well, they've got motocross, and one of the responses was, well, that must be a big ratings generator right here. I'm like, yeah, and ironically at that time, and I'm not, this is, you know, true story. I said, you know, because they were asking about when the next pay-per-view was after this, after, you know, Saturday's card. And I said, it's March 3rd. I go, but this card is very similar to what we're seeing next Saturday. And they go, well, what do you mean? I go, it's a one-fight pay-per-view. And I said, if Holloway or Edgar doesn't make it to March 3rd, I don't know what the UFC does. And then ironically, 6 hours later, it comes out that Max Holloway's off it. And it really makes me wonder, is the UFC at a point now with their roster that they really can't put together 13 premium fight cards a year?
Yeah, no, they are, like, for sure. Like, dude, like, absolutely. Like, oh my God, look at these two pay-per-views. Like, this is awful. Because they're not only doing 13 premium shows a year, they're doing, like, an absurd amount of TV shows a year that spreads it thin. And they don't do a good job of separating the cards into tiers. There are pay-per-view type fights on TV, which is great. But then you have fights like Ciryl Asker and Tuivasa and Jake Matthews and Jingling Ling and Tyson Pedro and Safarov on your pay-per-view, instead of pay-per-view quality fights that were put on TV. So I don't know if they have the roster, if they only had to run 13 shows a year to do 13 great pay-per-views. Maybe, probably. But the thing is, it's not 13 premier shows. It's, what, 40 shows a year for the UFC, something like that?
I have to imagine there is a lot of our listenership that is probably saying, passing on 221, passing on 222 most likely, because I think it's, you know, you're not going to see Dillashaw and Garbrandt there. And I love what TJ Dillashaw is saying. Why should he step up on 4 weeks' notice to save the company? It is kind of interesting how at this time, basically the UFC, the fighters in the UFC aren't scared of the UFC anymore. They're just like, nah, I'm good. Which, when, you know, TJ's initial comment when it came out, I said, he's basically telling the UFC, put an offer on the table I can't refuse.
Yeah. And they, I mean, it's because, you know, they've seen it happen before when the breaking case of emergency for a Diaz brother. They've seen what it looks like when you see is put in a corner and forced to give a money for somebody to save a pay-per-view.
It
makes a lot of sense.
I was thinking this earlier today. If you want to save UFC 222, I don't think it's possible. Nate Diaz main event, Nick Diaz in the co-main event.
Yeah, that's how you can save it, man. But you're...
I don't think Nick's eligible to fight. I think that's the problem. I think he's still got the USADA whereabouts issue he's dealing with.
Well, yeah, I think Nate Diaz in the main event is enough to sell pay-per-views. But I don't know.
Like, here's a question. If you went and told Conor McGregor, here's $40 million, will you fight on March 3rd?
I think he will, because I'm pretty sure he's out of money. I think he's spent all his money, and he's now realizing it.
Look, I think it's a 50-50 chance we see Conor Floyd, too.
Man, I think so, just because, like, actually, I think it's less than that. I just don't, like, inside an MMA cage.
Oh, no, I think it's in a boxing ring.
Oh, wow. Oh, man, I would be, I just think society is just so over that fight. Like, it was great one time, but there's no way anyone's buying that fight a second time. I mean, I know they're both superstars, but it just feels like we're being used, you know? We're being used for our money for this sideshow. I just don't know. I think Americans and people around the world have too much decency and pride to pay money for that fight again.
Yeah, I think you do it. You do it at the right time. Who knows? Maybe it's an MMA fight with some type of mixed rules. Maybe there's no takedowns or something like that. But it's just like, you know, I look at this Saturday and I love Romero Rockhold is a premium fight. There is no question about it. It's my number one fight on this card. Do I dare say my number two fight is Formiga and Wynn?
I agree with you. The number two fight on this card is a random fight on the prelims. It's not even the main event. It's the flyweight contest between Formiga and Ben Wynn. And it's, to me, it's not even close.
Yeah, it means a lot for that division. I mean, you know, Hunt Blades, it's, for Curtis Blades, it's a huge fight. You know, a chance for him to really propel himself into, you know, that lower top five, top seven, top eight-ish, you know, area. But you know, that's one of those fights that, you know, if he wins, he probably takes Mark Hunt down and hammers him out on the ground. I mean, you know, the Tyson Pedro Safarov fight, I you know, that's got me intrigued a little bit. But in terms of me putting down $65 to sit on my couch and watch this pay-per-view, I can't do it. I can't do it.
Yeah, this is a really tough task to pick our top three fights on the card. Obviously, we have number one is Romero Rockhold, and we both have Wynn and Formiga. And I almost begrudgingly put Mark Hunt and Curtis Blaydes in the number three slot because that fight does not inspire me. It just makes me say, bleh. Like, it's just not a sexy fight.
No
offense to Mark Hunt. But I still think it's the third biggest fight on the card and the third most interesting, which just speaks to this card. It, you know, what this lineup looks a lot like is opportunities for individual fighters to have great performances. This could be a great showing for Pedro or Tuivasa or even Soraska versus Tuivasa. Maybe Jake Matthews or who's a, you know, underdog against Jing Liang. But yeah, man, this is a rough card. And, you know, what's crazy is we're so pessimistic about this card and we haven't even mentioned that Taruto's on it.
Yeah, he's on the Fight Pass prelims. Also, Ross Pearson on the Fight Pass prelims. When it comes to the main event, I don't know who I'm going to pick. My gut says Romero.
Yeah, mine too. It just feels like he can overwhelm Rockhold physically, and he's going to have the ability to control where it takes place. And it's like he's going to be uber aggressive. I could just see him controlling the entire pace of this fight and being the one that dictates the offense.
Yeah, I mean, but I you can't count Luke Rockhold. I mean, I just, you know, what happens if this fight, you know, gets into the fourth or fifth round? But man, I just can't get excited for this fight card. I mean,
I can't either. And I could see a situation where Rockhold does come back from behind and piece together like a late round submission, which would make for a compelling fight, man. I just don't know if it's going to go that far. I think Romero may just, in fact, overwhelm Rockhold early, but this is a great fight. Technically, I think Luke has the advantage in most of the areas, but just the physical nature and athleticism of Romero, I think, is going to make up a bigger gap than Rockhold's technical advantage.
And I got to think that the UFC, in an ideal world, probably is hoping for a Rockhold win because then that gives them a fresh matchup. You know, at for the 185-pound title, as opposed to going back to Romero and Whitaker. But yeah, man, I know Ariel did a poll on his Twitter about are you buying 221, and the time I looked at it, I believe 86% was no.
That's unsurprising, man, no. Because if you're looking for an excuse not to buy a pay-per-view, this main card presents it. This is a rough one.
Yeah, it's, you know, honestly, like, even my wife asked me the other night, she's like, are you going to be watching the UFC live? And I'm like, I go, honestly, I said, you want to go to Lightning game on Saturday night? I said, and then, you know, I'm sure there'll probably be a bar somewhere around the arena that's showing the event. We'll go over there and we'll grab a late night meal and watch the end of the fights.
I feel like that's you being a good person. This is an opportunity for you as a mixed martial arts fan to remember that there are human beings in your life that don't like MMA. You know, this is the window. This is the window, man.
That's so true. Oh, that is so true. I'm going to have to tell my wife you said that.
Yeah. I mean, it used to be weekends when there weren't mixed martial arts events, but now there is a UFC.
There is no such thing.
Yeah, so now you have to do the next best thing, and that's the cards that insult your intelligence as a viewer. And that's what this one does. It insults your intelligence. It looks at your bank account and it says, you're a millionaire, aren't you? It's like, no, we're not. We can't afford this. We're going broke because of the UFC. And I'm going to spend it with some friends over some wings with some fights on the TV with my notepad and, you know, I got buffalo sauce on my fingertips all over my notes. That's usually how I do notes. But yeah, man, look, there are fun things to talk about with this card. We'll talk about it after it's over. You know, Volkanovski is interesting at featherweight. But in the meantime, the story is the UFC is doing a pay-per-view. And in all likelihood, very few people are going to watch it.
Yeah, that is very true. But I do want to go back a couple weeks, UFC on Fox 27. The main event of that fight card saw Andre Feely get a decision win over Dennis Bermudez. Had a chance to catch up with Andre late last week to talk to him about his victory. Going to let you hear that now, and then when we come back, myself and Daniel are going to talk about some of the latest news and notes in MMA. Andre, congratulations on the victory. Obviously, some time has now passed, and I mean, I'm sure you have seen all the comments that are online about how close of a fight this was. Was it a controversial decision or not? As you have gone back and watched your own performance, is there something that maybe, you know, after the fight you didn't see in the fight, you know, right after remembering it, that just maybe, you know, showed you in your mind, like, look, there's no controversy here. I got the win.
Yeah, I was confident as soon as the fight was over. I mean, I think he did a good job landing leg kicks. That's about it. He took me down once. I took him down four or five times. I mean, he landed some leg kicks, and he did a good job pushing forward, I guess. But even when he was pushing me forward, I was landing the harder, cleaner shots. Like, he would push me back with a few jabs that would miss, and I would catch him with check hooks coming in. So, I mean, I just don't see. I mean, if he put it, I just don't see it. You know, I mean, he did a good job with landing leg kicks. I don't think that's enough to win him the fight. I landed the harder, crisper shots. I took him down much more than he took me down. Even when he held me on the fence, I was landing knees to the body and the head. I mean, I just don't see. I don't see it. I thought then, and I think now, that I did plenty enough to get the win, and I'm happy with it.
You know, when people think of Dennis, they think about the amount of takedowns he's got inside UFC competition, and you won that side of it, four takedowns to only one. Was there anything that he did in the fight that surprised you in how he was trying to attack you?
No, I think he did a good job with the leg kicks, you know. I think he threw leg kicks a lot. I should have checked him a little better, but I feel like that's the only, you know, like, the only thing that he was landing consistently was those leg kicks, and you know, they weren't hurting me, they were just kind of keeping me off balance. But you know, I wasn't surprised. I know he's tough, I knew he's going to push forward. Nothing surprised me about the way he fought me. I kind of knew what he was going to do. I like it, and he did it. But he's good, you know. I knew that he was going to push forward, I knew that he was going to be aggressive, I knew he was going to come to fight. You know, I've watched him fight before, and I knew that's what he was going to do. So no, I'm not surprised. You know, it was an honor to fight him. He's a tough guy. He's been in the top, you know, top rankings for a long time, and it was an honor to fight him, and I'm really happy with the win.
I always wonder when, you know, a guy is a betting underdog and their friends go out and place bets on you. Do you get a cut of that money? If they said, hey, I just won $5,000 on you, or do you go to them and say, hey, man, I deserve a little cut of that money, right?
I never really ask my friends for the money they make off me betting, although it's not a bad idea. Maybe I should start. I never really think about it, you know what I mean? Like, I'm happy when my friends make money off the fights. You know, I like seeing my friends do good. I never really think about asking them for a cut, but maybe I need to start.
Maybe, especially if they cash in big time on you. But I liked what you said on the post fight show on FS1 after, where you know they were trying to get you to call out a name of who you wanted next, and you said, "I just want a single number next to their name." Is that just simply your mindset of like, "Hey, look, there's not really a guy that I want, but it's just about, hey, I just beat the 12th guy. You know, give me a guy, you know, 9-1, right?"
Right, 100%. I mean, I'm here to beat the best guys in the world. You know, like, I'm here to prove that I'm the best 145-pound fighter in the world. Otherwise, what's the fucking point? Everyone's tough. Everyone's here to fucking kill or be killed. Everyone's here to get in there and mix it up and prove something. Every fight's going to be tough because we're at the top of the sport. So if I'm going to go in there and fight someone, I want it to mean as much as possible. I'm here to fight the best guys in the world, and I'm here to beat them. And, I mean, everything else is just noise. Like, you know what I mean?
Right now, as you know, we're now just a week or two since this fight ended. Is it just getting back into the training room, you know, helping out Josh Emmett get ready for his fight, and just kind of work on the little things that you're trying to improve on?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, at this point in my career, you know, it's like you're trying to get better 1% every day. So, yeah, I take a little bit of time, a couple of days off, do some recovery stuff, get my body feeling good, and I'll be right back on the mat, you know, drill, not going crazy, not sparring, but making sure my body feels good and drilling and improving, you know, trying to get better 1% every single day. So, I mean, I'm going to be there to try to help my teammates as much as possible. Got some big fights coming up. That's sort of one of the things about being on Team Alpha Male is it's a lifestyle. You know, you're not just in the gym when you have a fight camp. You're in the gym all the time. You're helping, you know, the guy, those guys, you know, as soon as Josh got back from knocking out Lamas, he was in there helping me get ready for Bermudez, you know, and as soon as I get a couple of days to let my body heal up, I'm going to be in there giving him whatever he needs to get ready for Stevens. You know, I mean, it's really a co-op, you know. Faber's always preaching about how it's a co-op, you know, but it's completely true. You know, we all help each other. We all have the same goals, and, you know, we all really give a shit about each other. So I'm going to get back in there. I'm going to help Josh. I'm going to keep drilling. I'm going to keep sharpening everything. And, you know, then when I'm back in camp, I'll be back to grinding hard, pushing, sparring, all that stuff. But for now, it's just the lifestyle side of it, staying in the gym, staying healthy, and helping your teammates.
I've talked to a couple of your teammates about the King of the Mat competition that goes on inside Team Alpha Male. So have you ever won the King of the Mat?
Yeah, I won King of the Mat 2 or 3 times.
You know, obviously that's just a competition thing, and you know, obviously competition's what this whole sport's about. Where does your competitiveness come from? Is that something that from an early age you just had?
I don't know, man. It's kind of weird. Like, I think from an early age, like, I only give a shit about a couple things, honestly. Like, there's only a few things I give a shit about. Like, and those things I really, really give a shit about. Like, there's only a few things I care about, and most things I just don't care at all about. So it's like, the things that I do care about, like my passions, I really, really give a shit about them. I'm not one of those guys that's like, yeah, I kind of like this, I kind of like that. I don't like losing at this thing or that thing. Like, since I was a kid, all I ever wanted to do was fight. And losing a fight makes me sick to my stomach. I hate losing a fight. All I care about is winning fights. But my competition really isn't like, I mean, I don't give a shit about, I don't watch sports. I don't care about playing other sports. I don't care about most things, man. Like, I only give a shit about a few things. I like tattoos. I like comic books. I like skateboarding. You know, I like laying in bed with my dog and my girlfriend and watching Netflix. And I like fighting people. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a very short list of things I actually like to go do. And when it comes to the things I like, I'm very competitive. I'm very passionate. I hate losing. I love winning. But that's part of it for me. It's just like, there's only a few things that I really focus on. Everything else is just noise, man. I don't care about a lot of other shit. I don't care about a lot of things that other people care about. So I think my competitiveness comes from being completely invested in the things I really love, you know, and knowing that those are the things I'm passionate about, and I want to be as successful as possible at those things.
And, you know, I was going to ask you about your tattoos. It's something I tend to ask a lot of guys. What was the first tattoo you ever got? What was the last tattoo you got?
The first tattoo I got was some script on the side of my head. And I'm going to have to cover it up because I was 19 and my taste in tattoos has changed a little bit. So I'm going to have to fix it or cover it up or something here. Pretty soon. The last tattoo I got was a portrait of the Grinch. I got a tattoo of the Grinch on my calf.
Now, were you a big fan of the Grinch growing up?
Yeah, I was, but also it's just more about my personality. Like, my girlfriend and my teammates and stuff, they all say I'm like the Grinch, the way I'm shaped, the way my facial features are. I have this crazy, like, sometimes my hair gets all crazy and curly, and I look like the Grinch. I'm all long and skinny, but sometimes I have a little belly, and I'm like, I love certain shit, you know, but a lot of times I'm also kind of grumpy and don't like to be around people besides the people I really like to be around. So my personality is kind of Grinchy, you know, and I fucking love Christmas. So I'm kind of the Grinch, you know. People call me the Grinch a lot. So that's why I got it.
Now, do we ever? Could there ever be a point where, when Bruce Buffer's announcing your name, it's Andre the Grinch Feely? Is that ever going to happen?
I mean, I'm not out of the question. It's not out of the question, but I think Touchy's probably the one I'm going to stick with. It's just, it's kind of stuck. You don't really get to pick your own nicknames, you know. So, Touchy pretty much stuck, and I'm going to keep rolling with it. But yeah, I wouldn't mind the Grinch. I feel like the Grinch is my spirit animal.
And, of course, got that victory at UFC on Fox 27. Look forward to seeing your next fight, Andre. I appreciate time, and let all my listeners know where they can follow you at on social media.
All my social media is Touchy Feely, TouchyFili. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, whatever. Just hit me up. I'm pretty normal dude. I usually get back to everybody who hits me up, or I try to get back to everyone who hits me up. So, yeah, hit me up.
Daniel, there was my conversation with Andre Feely. We'll see when he does get back inside competition. Of course, probably a guy that if a short notice fight does come up, definitely someone who's going to try to get in there, does want to get someone in the top 10. We'll see if he does get that. But we do want to get into some of the news and notes going on in MMA, also answer a listener question as well. One of the things the guy announced last week, Fabricio Werdum versus Alexander Volkov, is the main event of the London card. And my first thought was like, wow, Volkov's getting that fight. But then I had not realized how many wins he's pulled off in a row here in the UFC.
Yeah, he's a guy that you still think of with the Bellator tag on him. And you think of, you know, his ultimately losing in Bellator, but since coming to the UFC, this is a guy who's straight up undefeated, and his best win is obviously the last one over Struve. And you're talking about a win over a guy, Roy Nelson, who's very likely going to win the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix, the odds-on favorite, JK, and a win over Timothy Johnson, who, you know, Timothy Johnson isn't the sexiest guy in the whole division, but he's a real grinder, man, and he will grind people out and get victories over most guys. So for Volkov to beat Johnson, beat Nelson, and really turn it into hyperdrive in the Netherlands to take out Struve, I think Volkov clearly deserves a big fight, but this is definitely a fight where he's the B-side heading up against Fabricio Werdum, because Werdum is in a position where he has the resume currently to be a late replacement for a heavyweight title fight. That's where I would put Werdum at. He's not a guy you want to see challenge for the heavyweight championship, but because of his resume as a former champion and having won three of his last four, Werdum could very easily be like, ooh, things just hit the fan. Daniel Cormier pulled out. Let's do Werdum Miocic. So Werdum has a lot to lose for this fight. The fighter with a lot to gain is Volkov. Not a sexy main event, but it's one I'm looking forward to in London.
Yeah. I got to imagine London fans are not too excited about it. We did get a question from at JoeDaddy85 asking about the Ben Askren interview with Rogan. Said he did not recall us commenting on Ben Askren saying that the UFC told him to go fight one time in the World Series of Fighting. I'm going to play this piece of audio where Ben Askren talked about it on the Joe Rogan podcast.
I met with Lorenzo. Dana was on the little speakerphone dealy, and they offered me a Zuffa contract, but it would be confidential, and I would have to fight one fight for the World Series of Fighting, which is like, well, that's bizarre.
What?
Yeah.
And they one fight for the World Series of Fighting? What exactly was the relationship with the World Series of Fighting? The World Series of Fighting was like a feeder organization at that time.
Something, yeah. I mean,
in a
way. Yeah.
And Marlon Moraes, Justin Gaethje, both those guys came from champs over there.
Yeah,
UFC.
I think the relationship is very hazy between the old World Series of Fighting and the UFC, because there was also people that went the other way, right? Andre Arlovski gets dropped from the UFC, goes to World Series. Anthony Johnson, boom, all these people. Yeah. So they say one fight, World Series of Fighting, we will pay, Zuffa will pay you. But you do one fight.
Okay.
I say, well, that's effed up, but okay. I said, I don't think anyone's going to go for it, but I'll do it. So I leave. And about 6 hours later, I got a phone call and says that deal is no longer available. We are not going to make you an offer.
And that was Ben Askren on the Joe Rogan podcast. You know, you got to remember at that time, you know, there was, I remember at that time I had heard that
There was potential of the WSOF going on Fight Pass for their prelims. And so, you know, I think ultimately the thing you say about that is kind of shady business going on there.
Yeah. Also, like, who cancels 6 hours after you make an agreement like that? What a weird deal there. And a lot of different points of view. Firstly, the first thing I would say is, like, why would you mess around with someone as talented as Ben Askren like that? A guy who very clearly is one of the best welterweights in the world. What's he going to prove to you, that he's become a striker, a World Series of Fighting? No. And so I guess that points to two. Is the reason they did this just to give World Series of Fighting a little back rub or a back scratch? And that's really shady, that if that them and the UFC have this relationship at this point in time. So, well, I'm pretty sure maybe we'll need like some type of hardcore investigative think piece down the line. But it makes you wonder how many different stories like this aren't being reported and aren't being talked about, because it seems like that's just a normal day in the office for that for UFC at the time.
Yeah, it makes you wonder. I mean, you know, there's obviously, you know, people look at Invicta, you know, the kind of how the relationship is there with UFC, and just, you know, I wish we would see Ben Askren in the UFC. I just don't think it's ever going to happen. You know, by the way, speaking of free agents, John Fitch announced on his YouTube channel that he's a free agent, negotiations with Bellator. If I'm Bellator, I'd much rather have Ben Askren than John Fitch.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, John Fitch is very much the older version of Ben Askren with less upside. That's what I would paint him as. I kind of hope he goes to the UFC. I know it's unlikely. Just because, I mean, Jesus, you talk about burning bridges. They've had so many different rough situations. Even before he left the UFC, obviously the whole video game deal back when I can't even remember what the whole situation was. It was something like John Fitch wanted money for rights.
It was about the UFC basically having their rights, essentially, and which you understand where the fighters are coming from. I've actually seen, because you know the new UFC game came out last week. I saw all these fighters tweeting about it, and like I was like, should I play it? No, I'm not gonna play it.
Yeah.
I guess I don't have time.
Well, to be fair, there's a lot more time available for a UFC game than a football game. You know, that's the fortunate thing. Unless you're main event,
tell you the last time I actually turned on my Xbox.
Yeah, I know. I get you. I have a PS4, and I'm scared to turn it on also because I don't know if the cords are connected properly and if it's going to overheat, and you got to update it.
Well, that's the problem, like, because I only maybe play maybe once a month, and that's probably pushing it. But I feel like every goddamn time I turn my Xbox on, it wants to update, and the update takes forever. And I'm just like, screw it.
Then you don't want to play for another, like, 10 months, and then it's the same problem over and over and over again.
I just, when I see that thing update, it frustrates the crap out of me.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, and I'm like, oh God, maybe if I can run a long enough cable from my router, maybe it'll go a little quicker. I mean, oh, so frustrating.
I don't know, man. I would love to just record this podcast with you while you're playing UFC the entire time. That'd be great stuff.
I mean, the question, you know, it makes you, you know, I mean, I would love to know how many people buy that game. I that would be really interesting to know. What is that? How many units were sold?
I bet it's a lot more than you think it is, man. But I don't know.
Probably. Yeah, you know, you're probably right. I mean, but, you know, look, kind of going back on the Askren thing. It's, am I shocked? No, I'm really not.
No. It's not shocking at all. It's just really cool to hear it talked about so frankly. And
yeah, at the end of the day, you know, the UFC is supposed to be a place where all the best fighters fight. And you know, I'd love to see what Ben Askren could do at 170 in the UFC. But unfortunately, you know, we're never going to see that take place. The final thing to mention here on the podcast. It was announced on Saturday night. The UFC is going to Chicago for pay-per-view on, I believe it was June 9th. Right when I saw it, I said, oh, man, there is the return of CM Punk.
Yeah. And that's awful because I'm a big fan of wrestling and MMA. And for both sports, a negative would be CM Punk fighting MMA again because he needs to be a wrestler. That's what he's good at. He's not a very good fighter.
Hey,
so,
look, you have to do CM Punk, Mike Jackson. That's the fight to make.
Yeah, I guess it is. I guess it is the truth, Jackson. That's probably it. I mean, Jason, don't forget about. I still gotta say the biggest UFC news all week had to have been UFC 222. I guess we kind of talked about it already, but that card, man, Holloway Edgar.
You knew it. That card was not great when the co-main event was announced as Stefan Struve, Andrei Arlovsky.
Yeah, man.
Like it wasn't that long ago Dana White said, we're not boxing. We do not put on one-fight cards. Well, UFC 221 is that. UFC 222 is that. Like,
You know what I'm tired of hearing also is the whole, well, we're just really unlucky with injuries this year.
How about you just putting on too many cards?
You're putting on too many cards, and you've been unlucky with injuries every year because you're promoting mixed martial arts. That's the name of the game, man. A significant portion of the fights you book won't happen because it's a hard sport to not get injured when you train. And it's just the UFC needs to be aware about where they are today when it comes to how many star fighters they have and how many cards they should run.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame what TJ Dillashaw did. Don't blame him at all. More fighters should do that. If I was repping TJ Dillashaw, I would have said $1 million, I'll show up.
That's worth it because again, this is a guy who's not training, and if he comes back, he's gonna fight Cody Garbrandt likely. So like it just makes no sense unless you're getting a massive payday to risk championship status in a situation like this, because championship status means one thing. It means bigger paychecks. And
even if you could make Dillashaw Garbrandt, what's the high end of the pay-per-view buy rates? $275,000?
Yeah, that's the high end. And because of the lack of momentum of promotion, that's probably what you're looking at anyway.
I mean, there is no data to show that Cody Garbrandt's a draw on pay-per-view. I mean, he's been on pay-per-view in the co-main event twice. One was for a Ronda fight, and one is for a GSP fight. So you really can't say whether he's a draw or not. You know, yeah, he was on two big pay-per-views, but it was because of who was in the main event, not because of Cody Garbrandt. And for TJ Dillashaw, he hasn't shown he's a pay-per-view draw at this time. So I Edgar Ortega, I'd love to see that fight. That's a great fight. God, I wish I was in Orlando.
Man. Yeah, that should have been in Orlando. And that would be a great TV main event. But a pay-per-view main event, nope, it would not. And, yeah, man. Oh, the moral of the story for this podcast is UFC pay-per-view is really awful the first third of 2018.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it gets better. Right now, 223 in Brooklyn looks good.
Yeah.
Hopefully Tony and Khabib make it to the fight night, I guess. But you know what? They have a backup plan there with Rose and Ioana as, the co-main event.
It's clear they have to always double book these shows with two main events. And maybe that means you can't run 13 pay-per-views a year, Jason. It's something to say. Maybe you should only run 10 pay-per-views a year. There's a novel concept.
How about six?
I mean, six, you can actually do cards that are worth $60. So now you're talking.
But I think the problem is that they'll go, oh, we're going to lose so much money. But if you did a pay-per-view every other month, it would make pay-per-view special again.
Yeah, I wonder how high the buy rates would get. I don't know what the lineups would look like, but
Look, for me, I'm not sitting here saying I've got so much money in the bank it doesn't matter. I have expendable income, so I could easily go out and spend $65 on Saturday night for UFC 221. But to me, as a consumer, I have to say no. Like, this is not worth, what I consider a premium card.
Well, yeah, because you don't want to send a message to the UFC that you will buy anything they slap the UFC brand on. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're telling you. And I understand they had injuries for this card. But when they made this card, they still made it a very weak card that when they announced Whitaker versus Whitaker, the Whitaker fight, you knew this was a weak card in the same way you knew Edgar versus Holloway was a one-fight card. So There's very little sympathy here, I think, from me.
Yeah. By the way, I will tell you, last Saturday night, I was slipping between the UFC and the NBA game because I was like, oh, maybe the NBA game would be good. Oh, hell no.
Rockets destroying the Cavs.
Man, yeah, Cavs are a bad basketball team.
Yeah, man, they're ruining the trade deadline because they're supposed to do something good, but they might be so bad that the NBA trade deadline is boring. But, I mean, it's coming on Thursday, the NBA deadline. Yeah. So surely something crazy will happen. And, you know, the Orlando Magic no longer have an insane general manager. So who knows?
Oh, man, you must have been listening to my my interview with Greg Rebello as we were talking a little Magic and a Celtic basketball. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to be a Magic fan.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and look, my favorite time of the year is 1 month away. March Madness, baby. Can't wait.
Absolutely, man. It's going to be interesting to see whether or not Florida State loses in the round of 64 or round of 32. But it's going to be a big time for my Aggies. I think we're going to win the whole tournament.
Man. Yeah. I see how you like to end the show. I see how it is.
Yeah. I say this, and A&M might not actually make the tournament, which is... I'm getting my shots in now.
Hey, it's I love basketball. It's I tend to spend a lot of my nights on the couch watching basketball. But that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, we are going to be back next week as we are going to recap UFC 221. Plus, we'll get you ready for UFC Fight Night 126. Of course, that's headlined by Donald Cerrone and Yancy Medeiros. Also, we'll get you ready for Bellator 194. Going to have some Bellator 194 fighters on next week's podcast. Still locking up who those fighters may be, so look out on my social media for that. Of course, follow me on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. Follow Dale on Twitter at DaleGabonDGG. Of course, be sure to subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. Really would appreciate leave us a 5-star review if you really like this podcast. Always appreciate those reviews. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. We're here every Wednesday on Radio Influence.
Chris Landry inviting you to join me for Landry Football Podcast every Tuesday and Thursday. We'll give you the coaching and scouting angle to the college and NFL game. Film breakdowns, scouting reports, X's and O's, the latest inside scoop, coaching search information. We've got it all for you. I'll take my experiences as a coach and a scout and bring it to you, the fan, to give you access to the best football information on the college and pro level. Join us at LandryFootball.com. And remember, the Landry Football Podcast right here, as well as Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.